right now.
This is
2FM's Game On.
And you're very welcome to Game On here on 2FM. It's Hugh Cal with you until 7 o'clock tonight. Coming up on the show, the Champions League takes centre stage tonight. Of course, it's Real Madrid and Trent Alexander-Arnold return to Anfield. And, of course, Arsenal just in action at the moment in Slavia Prague. Paul Curry and Mark Langdon look ahead. We'll also hear from Carlo O'Brien after the Women's World Cup draw this afternoon. Johnny Sexton on Japan this weekend and the state of the Ireland camp after New Zealand last weekend in Chicago. And Raby Burns is going to talk Tom McKibben's win in Hong Kong last weekend. Plus, the final stages of the race to Dubai kicking off on Thursday. 51552 for your texts as always, and delighted to say I have Ruby Walsh with me. Hopefully, Ruby, you can hear me, and hopefully I can hear you.
You can indeed, Hugh. How are you?
I'm fantastic. I love it when a plan comes together. First night back in on the desk, Ruby. If I make a balls of this, that's it. No more chances. I've had enough chances in here, I can tell you. For one man.
Don't stop. Listen, life is full of chances. There's lads in the world need more chances than you, trust
well,
me.
Well, listen, I'll tell you what, a cat and all that kind of stuff. Come here, listen, you were in Clonsilton this morning. I imagine the atmosphere was pretty nice after Willie's exploits in the Breeders' Cup this weekend. Fantastic result.
It was, yeah. Incredible results, so it was. But I guess traipsing around in the rain below and close up this morning, Hugh, was a long way from Delmar at the weekend. And I guess absurd finishing 17. The Melbourne Cup brought it down to a little bit. Back down to reality.
Yeah. I mean, look, obviously, look, and you know, the prize money we know is fantastic over there. So he just about washed his face over there. But for Willie, I mean, I don't know, Ruby, like, would you have an idea of what his kind of best hopes were in the Breeders' Cup over the weekend?
Fifth.
Like, fifth, really? That was, like, if everything went to plan, maybe hope for top five.
Oh, yeah. If you ran into fifth or sixth, you're going to be delighted. Again, cover his costs. Day out, owners get to go, experience the whole thing. But no one thought he could win, and Dylan gave him a brilliant ride. But look, that was it was magic. It was fabulous and a wonderful result for him. But look, he went on to Flemington last night, or 4 o'clock this morning, and the Melbourne Cup, look, he'd no joy, but it was a wonderful race to watch, and what a win for half yours, more so for Jamie Carr, who rode him. What a story she is, and obviously that's not her married name. Her married name is Meenan, but she is probably better known as Jamie Carr. I mean, when you look back through her career, 2023, she got a fall in Flemington, she was in an induced coma for 5 days, a bleed on her brain. Before that, during COVID, she ended up getting a ban because if she was at a party she shouldn't have been at, and then she comes all the way back to winning the Melbourne Cup. I mean, she came out of that concussion in hospital in 2023 googling her own name so she could figure out what age she
was. You're joking.
And there she is winning the Melbourne Cup this morning. Amazing. She was brilliant on it too.
10 years after Michelle Payne, of course, won the first female jockey to win it on Prince of Penzance. And what you got up this morning to watch it, what did you like about her ride, Ruby?
The gap she took, you.
Really?
Like she put the horse through the eye of a needle off the home turn, down against the inside rail, and just the commitment. I mean, the second gap that she went into, she probably ended up making the gap for herself. That to me is race riding. It's brilliant to watch. I just thought she was very, very good on it. So she was.
Yeah, brilliant stuff. Great stuff for all concerned. Joseph Bryan, of course, second on the Goody Two Shoes as well. And absurd, as we mentioned, finished 8 for Willie. Right, OK, we're going to talk Champions League in just a second. Before we do that, the PwC All-Star Awards take place at the RDS this Friday. And to find out if they got it right, it's all a matter of conjecture, I suppose, one man's opinion versus another's. And make sure you watch the PwC All-Stars on RT1 television, 7:30, it all kicks off on Friday. All the country's top GA football and hurling talent will be there, as always. And as we honour their excellence, commitment and passion for their sport, if you can show your excellence too on GA knowledge today, you could be in a chance to win yourself €400 in cash, all thanks to PwC. Ruby?
If you fancy winning it, simply answer this question. Can you tell us who the winner was of the 2024 PwC GAA GPA Hurling Senior Player of the Year? Was it A, Claire Shane O'Donnell, or B, Limerick's Keane Lynch? Text us now on 51552 with your answer and name. As always, competition terms and conditions apply. See 2fm.ie and we will announce the winner at the end of the show.
Beautifully done. We will indeed. Best of luck with that. Now, Paul Curry, how are you?
I'm very well, Hugh.
Good
very
to see well. You. Champions League tonight, and we're looking at Arsenal in Slavia Prague here. I was looking through the stats here on the BBC website, And the Gunners, I think, unbeaten in their last 9 consecutive games and 7 clean sheets, Paul. Serious form, isn't it?
It's absolutely amazing. And even the lack of goals they've conceded in the Premier League, and you think back to the ones that they did, it was obviously a lovely bit of interplay when they played Man City, Haaland broke free. You then had the goal against Newcastle and the Szoboszlai free kick. Other than that, they haven't conceded a single goal in the Premier League. And that's been very consistent with their form in Europe this season. They've made 4 changes tonight. Jokeres is out with injury.
Looks like a hamstring.
Yeah, Zubimendi out. He's suspended. And they've brought in Moreno, Norgard, Ranieri, and also Calafiore drops out. And Inkape comes in, left back from that they signed from Leverkusen. To be honest with you, it's been a slow 22 minutes. The start of the game, kind of just waiting for Arsenal to get a set piece at this stage.
Now, come on now, stop that.
That's the way it feels.
But Paul, Slavia Prague went out of victory in the last 14 Champions League games. I mean, this should surely be a formality for Arsenal.
Yeah, it should be. I'm actually surprised, Ruby, that he didn't rest more players. I thought this was maybe an opportunity with Sunderland away on the weekend that maybe you could just rotate the squad a bit more. The squad has so much more strength than it did last year. The fact that they've been able to Odegaard, Havertz, Gabriel Jesus, they've, you know, managed very well. I'm not sure that would have been the same situation over the last 12, 24 months. But yeah, they shouldn't have any issues tonight. And I'm sure Arteta is looking at this league phase and just eyeing up those top 8 positions and working out how many points he's going to require to get in those top 8, because they will then play 2 less games than the teams who have to go into that qualifying round. But tonight should have no problems.
They shouldn't. What about this criticism from some quarters? You won't hear it from me, because I mean, if you're winning and you're unbeaten in 9 and you haven't conceded in 7 of those, it's not ugly football to me. I think they're very solid, but there is a certain faction, Paul, who think that it's actually not great to look at. What would you say to that?
I thought they showed signs on the weekend against Burnley where they looked a little bit more free-flowing. I think it was always going to take time for Jokeres to bed in at the top end of the pitch.
Yeah.
I think people have been too critical of him, to be honest with you.
You reckon, yeah?
Yeah, I do.
Was that based on the first game purely, do you think? I mean, his touch wasn't what it should have been, maybe. And I did watch that thinking, right, let's see what this guy's about. He wasn't at his best. But since then, I think he's been better and better.
Yeah, he's a bit of a barrel, isn't he, at the top end of the pitch?
And
he's that bit of a battering ram. I think people are quick to compare to the likes of Haaland and how quickly he took to the Premier League with the amount of goals he scored. But in fairness to Jokeres, what he does do is he occupies the 2 centre halves at the top end of the pitch. I think in previous seasons, if you look at Havertz and Jesus, they want to drop deeper, they want to become involved in the play. Jokeres will lead the line, he'll be that number 8, and with time the relationships will build with the likes of Saka, Eze, Martinelli at the top end of the pitch, and they will become a little bit more free flowing. But it's hard to criticise Arsenal. I mean, they're such a well oiled machine at this stage of the season. The back 4 just looks so solid, and when you think of the Premier League, that is likely what's going to get them over the line if they are to win the Premier League. My main concern when you look to Europe is you probably need a bit more top end of the pitch. We're yet to see that. I think that can come, but they're probably a little bit of a level below, particularly the likes of PSG and Real Madrid. They're the 2 teams, and Barcelona as well, just when you think of the attacking threats that they have.
I mean, if people are moaning about Arsenal maybe not that being that entertaining, Paul, what are they saying about Spurs?
Oh, I was. Do you know what? I messaged Stephen Kelly on the weekend, just cause, as a Chelsea fan, just with the 1-0
win. Just to rub it in.
Yeah, just like it's hard to know what to make of Thomas Frank's side. There's times I've looked at them, Ruby, and I thought he's doing a very good job there. They look as if they've shored up a lot of the gaps that they had from last year. And there's other times where I've thought they've just looked so ugly in attack that they maybe fail to have any sort of ideas or cutting thread at the top end of the pitch. And it's hard to know what to make of them. Like, they really don't have the same sort of quality in their squad when you compare it to the likes of a Chelsea, Liverpool, Arsenal, Man City. They just can't compete at that level. But yeah, there's something not right. And I mean, that was very evident with Van de Ven and Jed Spence when they went off, and maybe the lack of respect they showed Thomas Frank. But I think there's more to that. Like, they need to work out what they are at this moment in time. They look a little bit like an Ange Postecoglou team at times, and then they look a little bit like Thomas Frank's side at Brentford, which is not what Spurs fans want.
No, look, whatever about Spurs, saying that Arsenal are boring when they keep winning matches is a bit ridiculous. It'd be like saying Ruby was boring at Cheltenham and kept winning on all those horses. I didn't find it boring, I can tell you that.
That's good to know, Hugh. But Copenhagen are in London tonight, and they've never beaten an English opponent in Europe, Paul. Surely Frank will get a European win tonight.
Yeah, you would like to think so, Ruby. Listen, they've 5 points from their opening 3 games, so they haven't started the competition badly. But when you look at the games that they have to come, like Copenhagen at home is one that you absolutely need to be winning. And I think given the poor record that they have against Chelsea in the Premier League, you want to put that result to bed as quickly as possible. And the only way to do that is a good performance tonight and hopefully a couple of goals. There's a couple of players in that squad that you would still have question marks about. you know, who were involved in that Postecoglou League campaign last year. Obviously, they did okay to go on and win the Europa League, but I still think there's a couple of question marks when you look at the likes of Richarlison, when you look at the likes of Romero and Porro and Udogi. At times, they've been very good and they look like good players, but other times they've looked very open and very easy to get at. But tonight they shouldn't have any problems.
Arsenal on the attack in Slavia Prague. Shot well saved by the keeper and it's just gone wide. We're going to talk more Champions League. Mark Langdon is going to the Spurs match this evening where they haven't won at home since the 24th of September, if you can believe that. So we'll talk to Mark in a couple of minutes' time. But elsewhere today, the Republic of Ireland women's team were anxiously waiting on news of the World Cup draw ahead of Brazil 2027. They were drawn in A2 with France, the Netherlands and Poland. So not the ideal group, but certainly there could have been tougher groups, as Tony Ward asked Carla Ward today.
What did you think of the draw?
Do you know what? We didn't want that pot C, did we? So when we got group, I think pot B, we were happy. It's look, any group that we're in is going to be tough. We know that. But if you look at, you know, teams that we can try and do something and look at our route to the World Cup, then I think this is not the worst draw, is it?
Certainly the group with Spain and England. Although you had said, didn't you, that you kind of had a feeling that you want to get England?
Yeah. Do you know what? It's really funny because I was thinking England. And even, to be honest, this morning I was talking to my daughter on the school run and she was adamant that we were getting England. And then I started to think, maybe not. And then we discussed who we might want. And look, I think this is certainly a better draw than England-Spain.
You're looking at opponents like Poland now. I mean, are they a realistic target for third in the group?
Yeah, I think, look, they'll probably be looking at us in the same way. You know, I think that we'll look at them. We'll, you know, it's probably thanks to us. Not probably, thanks to us. They're in that pot C. But look, they're a good side. They've shown that recently, you know, beating Wales 5-2 and drawing against the Netherlands recently. I think they've got calibre. They've got a grit, a willingness. So, look, it'll be tough. All of those games will be tough, but I think we can play and compete against anybody.
How much do you think your squad will have grown from the performances against Belgium and in particular the result?
Massive amounts. I think, look, you know, we've spoken a lot, haven't we? We changed shape to a system I believe suits us. And that showed. I think we've still got a lot of work to do because, look, we've only played two games in that system, so we can't get carried away. There's a lot of work to do. I think November will be great in terms of getting on the pitch and, you know, not necessarily focusing on Hungary, but focusing on ourselves ready for February and making sure that we can fine tune the system a little bit and continue to work on it. But look, it was good. But look, like I keep saying, and I'll keep saying it till until we get somewhere, we've got a lot of work to do still.
Best of luck to you. Thank you.
Thanks, Tony.
Yeah, that's Carla speaking to Tony a little bit earlier today. And look, maybe not the ideal draw. There's a penalty in Slavia Prague. Paul, tell us about it.
Yeah, I'm just waiting for the referee to go across. It was a set piece.
Yeah.
It was a corner kick that went into the box. Gabriel's met it with his head and it's come off the hand of the Slavia Prague centre half. So this is going to be given as a penalty.
Yeah,
it has.
Penalty, yeah.
I'd say Sacco will step up and this should be enough to put Arsenal one ahead.
Yeah, well, there you go. There was the goal that you felt was coming and it looks like it is, providing Sacco can get the job done from the penalty spot. Declan Rice as well, I think yellow cards and suspension ahead of Bayern Munich. So I know they were looking today, you know, if he was in any doubt, take him off as early as possible if the match was as good as one. So we'll see what happens there. Look, just on the Women's World Cup draw, we mentioned it could have been worse here. You've got Spain, England, Iceland and Ukraine all in one group, Paul, which is not ideal. Germany, Norway, Austria, Slovenia looks manageable. And then you have Sweden, Italy, Denmark and Serbia. So Carla Ward, look, you can always be happier with these things, but I think she'll take what she's got.
Yeah, particularly when she saw Spain and England in that group, you were fingers crossed that you weren't going to be drawn into it. I think what is handy about this group is the fact that we've played France and we've got results against France in recent times. So that's maybe something that you can lean on. I think Poland is a team. I know they've had very good results of late. I think they beat Wales comfortably in recent opposition. That's going to be a tough game, as is the Netherlands. So to be honest with you, it wouldn't really matter what pairing you put together. Only one team qualifies automatically out of those groups. It was always going to be pretty much an impossible task to get out of it. But I think what Carla Ward will want to see is some of those foundations that were laid against Belgium being on display again.
Improved upon.
Exactly, in that group. And it's all about then teeing yourself up for that playoff and then ultimately qualifying for another major competition.
Did he score, Ruby?
He did score. Saka has converted that penalty. The Slavia Prague management are going nuts on the bench about the penalty. But that said, Paul, if you do jump and put your hand level with your head, you're giving away a penalty, aren't you?
Did you see it, Ruby?
Yeah, he put his hand was level with his face. I mean,
no, but hang on, you say that, right? I mean, the hardest thing in the world to do is to jump with your hands by your side, like, you know what I mean?
That's what you're supposed to do.
I know you're.
It
supposed
might be
to.
Difficult. That's why they're professional footballers. That's what they're supposed to do.
It goes against all your natural instinct to keep jump with your hands down. Doesn't
as Roy Keane would say, "What's his job?
Jump with your hands down, tie him behind your back." But there you go, Michael Arteta hugging the Arsenal assistant coaches and 1-0 up. Yeah, perfect start for them.
What about the other group before you go, Paul Curry? Spain and England.
Yeah,
who get out there?
Oh, very good question. I mean,
6-1.
It's been very even, hasn't it, when those two teams have met in recent times. And a lot of the times it's been kind of at the tail end of competitions and finals that have gone by. Just looking at it, England 2-1 in penalties, Spain 1-2-1, England 1-0. So there's been very little between the two sides. And you would imagine that group, Ruby, is going to be decided by the head-to-heads. You would imagine that they will pick up maximum points against Iceland and Ukraine. So those head-to-heads are going to be really tasty. I think I'd lean in favour of Spain. I think,
would you, yeah?
Yeah, I would. I think in a once-off game, you have a better chance of beating a side like that. I think when you're playing them home and away, I think it's very difficult to get more points.
Paul, just asking a layman's question here now. Maybe you don't know the answer. But in a playoff draw then, who do we get? Is it from the pools below us? Or is there a chance we could get someone from... Could we get England in the playoff?
We get a lower tier team from League C, I think, is by virtue of the fact that we beat Belgium. That's my understanding of it anyway.
Grand. Regardless, we can't get anybody else in these pots.
No, exactly. So that's look, that's the hard job is the group phase. Mm. Here they go. And then a lower team from League C is my understanding of it, which was the benefit, I guess, of
the Belgium games. Yeah, that's exactly. Why it was so important.
Yeah, okay. Right, from the Women's World Cup draw to the Under-17s World Cup, which gets underway tomorrow in Qatar. So Raf Diallo has done a really nice piece up on the website, throwing back all the way back to 1997 in a team that contained Damien Duff and a few other familiar faces, of course, led by Brian Kerr, and huge success. They came back with a bronze medal. But he sat down with the current Under-17 head coach, Colin O'Brien, and this is what he had to say.
I suppose first off, I was talking to Thomas Morgan there on Sunday night, and he was telling me you'd invited him in, I think it was last Wednesday or Thursday, to have a talk with the lads. I suppose, what were you looking to get out of it in terms of bringing in one of the players who've kind of been there and done that, and how do you feel the lads responded?
Look, what Thomas and Brian and all those players done, you know, back in that time, I can remember it myself, to have the captain of the team to come in and to impart his knowledge and his insights of that great time to the players was which was invaluable. What we wanted, we got. You know, it was real honesty from Tom. You just can't beat a player, you know, former, whether it's an international player, a younger player, you know, a player that's played youth internationals at a high level, coming in to speak to a group. And it was fantastically received by not only the players but all the staff. And Thomas just spoke from the heart. It was brilliant.
One of the things I think from the stories of those kind of first couple of World Cups, the Brian Kerr teams, is sort of like the team bonding, but obviously it's a very different era. There's no mobile phones, all that kind of thing. From your own experiences of tournaments with other Ireland underage teams, like how have you tried to do that in that sort of more modern setting?
Yeah, look, obviously as society has changed, I've been involved a long time working with young teams and international teams, so a lot of experience there. Yeah, you still have to mould them. You still have to give them opportunities to have their downtime, trying to connect. But we do that. We do that within the group. You know, there's plenty of things we can do with the players in their downtime. And some of the times you just need to be left alone. You know, that's players need their own space at times. But what we've seen here with this group all season, and particularly since we went in, there's really you know, good team harmony within the group.
Yeah, and even looking at the number of minutes that the squad you've picked have played in terms of men's football at club level, it's more than all of their European peers. Do you look at that as a boost, and also the fact that a lot of them are League of Ireland based, where they're either playing against each other or more often than not alongside each other quite regularly, maybe compared to say the times when like the Morgan generation were out at different clubs in England?
Yeah, look, I suppose it's great. You know, is it 16 players you spoke about that have come through the League of Ireland system, or we'll say, you know, the Irish system as such, that are in the squad. A lot of them are playing at really good levels within the club. That's something that's, you know, it's not very unique, we'll say, to other countries as well, that does go on. I'm not particularly one that really would zoom in much on numbers. You know, I'll still look at teams, I'll still observe matches. You know, there's a lot of quality within this tournament here, and we have in our group as well. And we just want to, you know, start tomorrow and let that quality go. This is 2FM's
Game On. So, Paul Curry, a lot of quality in Irish groups, in Ireland's groups. That come from Panama, Paraguay or Uzbekistan?
I mean, it's
three.
It's definitely a group we should be getting out of, Ruby. Top two qualify, third go into kind of a pool of teams, and I'm not sure, is it the top eight third place teams then qualify for the knockout stages? So you would expect that we're going to be able to gather enough points, particularly with the fixture against Panama and Uzbekistan, to get out of the group. And then once you get out of there, you can be get a favourable draw and you go deep into this competition. But I think, listen, what's most exciting from an Irish perspective is that we've seen a number of these players feature in the League of Ireland. That is the benefit of having them here.
Like Noonan and Shamrock Rovers.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and there's a couple of players there, even down at Cork City. There's a couple of players playing in the First Division as well. So they've been in front of our eyes, and a number of people have seen kind of the quality that they're able to bring, particularly when you think of Michael Noonan, the goals that he scored, youngest scorer in European football, with the goal that he scored in the Conference League last year. He's also featured for the under-21s. So it's an brilliant opportunity for these players to put themselves in the shop window. But not only that, it's an opportunity to go deep into this competition. And, you know, you don't get too many opportunities to play in World Cups. You only have the under-17s, the under-20s, and then the senior competition. So what an opportunity for these players.
Yeah, no, it's brilliant. All games live on RT2 and the player as well. And as I said, 12:30 PM kickoff for Ireland against Panama tomorrow. We wish them the very best of luck with that. Mark Langdon is with us. Mark, how are you? Can you hear me, Mark?
I'm good, thank you. Yeah. Nice to speak to you again.
Yes, it's great to talk to you.
Nice to speak to you again.
It's been about 16 years, I think, since our last conversation, and nothing's changed here.
Maybe.
Still Spurs can't win a match at home, I think, Mark. Look, I know you're on the way to the match tonight. September the 24th was the last time they managed a win at the stadium. I mean, they've got to do something to arrest that and get the fans back on side there.
Yeah, I mean, at the stadium for the game against Copenhagen tonight, it was a poisonous atmosphere on Saturday after the game against Chelsea. Fans were furious, not with the result, but with the performance, you know, just lacked any kind of attacking intent. I think this is a really big game for Thomas Frank to try to win those fans back. I know people look at the league table and say things are going well for Tottenham, but the performances have not been good, particularly at home, and they really need something, I think, just to calm those that are starting to doubt whether Thomas Frank is the right man, you know, to lead Tottenham, given this is the biggest job by far that he's had in his career.
What's your own sense of him and his prospects? Are you convinced that he is the right man? Do you think he deserves time?
He definitely deserves time. You know, we're only, 10 games into the Premier League season, 3 into the Champions League. So I definitely think he needs to be given time, but he does need to show signs, I think, over the next couple of months of developing a style of play and a way of being able to progress the ball forward through midfield. His team selection is probably too negative at the moment. Now, at home to Copenhagen, you know, you really shouldn't need to play Paulinho and Bentancur together. You know, you only need to play one of those. There needs to be some freedom for those attackers.
Looks like
about what they do in the Premier League.
Okay, Paul, you know, obviously, you know, Copenhagen, as Mark said, they're not the strongest side that Spurs could get. So you can imagine, if they can't put in a performance line and score a few goals, at least give the fans something to cheer about. That there is, they'd start to say, look, maybe there are problems here.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think to Mark's point, I think, you know, the fans will want to see them open up and be a little bit more expansive and cause particularly teams like Copenhagen a few more issues. You wouldn't expect that they're going to be challenged like they were against Chelsea on the weekend with regards to being carved open, and they were carved open. That game could have been 3 or 4 if Chelsea had taken their chances. But tonight they shouldn't have any problems, and yeah, you could kind of put the handbrake down and see what sort of attack and flair you can put together. And if you think of Tottenham, like, the main criticism that they had under Conte and Nuno and Mourinho was that that's not their style.
Yeah.
I think Thomas Frank needs to impose in games like this and show that they can open up.
Yeah.
Mark, obviously Thomas Frank's not the only one under pressure. Arnie Slot, Liverpool have lost 6 of their last 8 matches. Real Madrid are in Liverpool tonight with Mbappe, who's absolutely on fire. How are they going to get on?
I mean, this is a more difficult game, it goes without saying. I think Real Madrid are a very good attacking team. I think it should be a fantastic game, full of goals. You mentioned there, Ruby, Mbappe has been brilliant this season. I think he hasn't always look the part for Real Madrid, but he does. Now Alonso has decided he's his main man. He's going to play to his strengths and forget about everybody else, really. You know, this is Mbappe's team now, and everybody has to play to the Mbappe tune. You can see Real Madrid scoring, but, you know, it wasn't that long ago. I was watching Real Madrid get turned over and conceding five at Atletico. So Liverpool, I would fancy to score a couple of goals as well. So I think it'd be full of goals. I always edge towards Liverpool for big Champions League games at home.
Yeah, I mean, look, obviously, you know, there would be favourites at home just about, but when you mentioned, I mean, Ruby mentioned obviously the Real Madrid's form, and you talk, Paul, as well about Mbappe, who just looks like a new player reborn. He looks fit, he looks sharp again. Looks like Real Madrid are going to base the team around him, which will keep the ego in check. We know that's a big thing with the likes of Mbappe and so. What's your own sense of how tonight might go?
Yeah, I think I'd lean just in favour of Real Madrid. I've watched a bit of them over the last couple of weeks. And if you think back to Ancelotti, Ancelotti used to pick his 11 and just almost say, OK, you go work it out.
Yeah.
Whereas Xavi Alonso seems to have a lot more structure on this team, and it seems to be benefiting the likes of Mbappe. They've obviously had to sacrifice one of the front three, and unfortunately Rodrigo isn't playing quite as much as he has last year, but that has certainly benefited Vinicius and Mbappe, and they are getting supplied with a lot more ball. And particularly then when you look at Bellingham, since he's come back in recent weeks, he looks as if somebody who's really benefited from having a bit of a break. He's played a lot of football over the last 2 years. He's come in, he's firing ever since he's got back into that side, and I just fancy him. I still think there's a lot of questions to be asked of Liverpool's back four.
Yeah, big
time. I think
Konate is a liability. I said this on Friday night. He's an absolute liability. And I think if you look at Virgil van Dijk as well and his performances, I don't think he fully trusts his centre-half partnership. And I think he is suffering because he's watching over his shoulder to make sure your man's where he should be when he's supposed to be.
Well, he's also worried about Kerkez to the left of him as well. Yeah. So he's got a couple of worries there. And if they play with the same sort of exposure that they have in recent weeks when they've been turned over, Real Madrid have more than enough quality at top end of the pitch to carve them open. And that would be my concern for Liverpool tonight. I think I agree with Mark. I think there'll be lots of goals in this game.
So Mark, loads of goals in Anfield. Arsenal are already winning. Napoli are drawing with Frankfurt. What about PSG and Bayern Munich?
Really exciting game. Looking forward to this one. Bayern rested their entire front three at the weekend, even though they were playing Leverkusen. Elise, Diaz and Harry Kane were all rested. They still won the game easily. I mean, look, we're talking about goals in games. I mean, this should be another one that's sort of 2-2, 3-2, either way. I think PSG home advantage probably just swings it for them. Doué won the Golden Ball today, best young player, but has been injured, unfortunately. But they've just got so many players that can play in those attacking positions. Like, PSG at home, like, would be where I'd be going.
Juve Sporting Lisbon.
Yeah.
Juve have got a new manager. Juve got a new manager just in charge. Spalletti won at the weekend, even though Jamie Vardy scored against them. I'd go for Juve to back that up and win again.
Mark, enjoy the match tonight. I was lucky enough to be in that stadium a couple of years ago for a rugby match, and it is absolutely fantastic. So even if you get no goals, make sure you enjoy all the food that's there in the canteen for you.
I will do. Thank you.
Thanks a million. Mark Langdon there every Tuesday night. Well, it's the last Tuesday night in this show anyway, isn't it? Yeah, yeah. There you go. Paul, quick one before. Trent Alexander-Arnold, right? I know Xabi Alonso said, look, go and enjoy it. Go and enjoy your return to Liverpool. What kind of reception do you think he's going to get? And do you think it's right that if, as has been suggested, the Liverpool fans are going to boo the hell out of him for leaving? I personally don't understand this. Kid who grew up there, local guy, fancied something bigger and better, fancied the change after giving an awful lot to a club. I will not understand it if they boo him tonight, but it looks like that might happen.
I think it'd be split. I thought it was split towards the tail end of the season as well. There was a couple of people booing him and other people who could fully understand his decision. I wouldn't be surprised if he gets pelters for the first 15 minutes. But yeah, I'd be with you, Hugh. Like, he gave an awful lot to Liverpool. I think the one thing that kind of people couldn't get their head around was the fact that he was going on a free, and they felt that, you know, maybe he should have committed and they should have got a little bit more. Actually, they paid 10 million, didn't they?
Yeah, I think 8.6 million to buy him out because they won him before the Club World Cup, the FIFA Club World Cup. Yeah.
It seems very unfair because of how much he gave to that club, the trophies, that, you know, two Premier Leagues, one Champions League. Incredible servant, incredible footballer while he was there. But opportunities to join Real Madrid don't come along too often, and
certainly
that was probably
not
the one time in his career. He's at his prime. If he signed for another 3 years, that opportunity was going to go astray, so you can't begrudge him for taking an opportunity like that. But try explaining that to some of the fans at Anfield.
Ruby, a bit like Gerry Lyons booing Colin Keane for going over and taking the Judd Bird job when he left the yard there. What do you think?
Yeah, but I'm a United fan.
Yeah.
He's no Ryan Giggs or Paul Scholes, is he?
No, well, he's not yet. He's not yet. He's been injured, though, so time will tell. He's still very young. Right, we'll take a quick break, guys. We're back in a sec, so stay with us. 51552 for your text.
This is 2FM's Game On.
Welcome back to Game On, and we're going to turn our attention to rugby. And as is tradition on the week of an international, someone has to face the media on a Tuesday afternoon, and with a misfiring Irish lineout, Johnny Sexton was chosen to speak to Michael Cochran.
As a group of coaches, how do you reflect or on mature reflection from the events in Chicago, and how do you look back upon that game now?
We've been very open and honest over the last 48 hours, really, in terms of looking at the game, looking at where we could have been better. Of course, as coaches, you always look and say, how was the prep? What could we have done different? Would we change anything? And then the players have done the exact same, and then we've come together and sort of said, like, a performance like that can't happen again, and need to make sure that it doesn't. So, yeah, it's a bit of everything, but we've had a good couple of days kind of healing, absorbing some of the information, and still, you can see guys are still hurting today. But it's important now we turn the page and make sure we finish this campaign, you know, with three good performances.
There's a huge degree of honesty there amongst the players, amongst the coaching staff as well, and that's all you can ask for when you're at this elite level.
Yeah, I think with any team environments, that's the most important thing. You're going to go through phases. You're going to go through good times, bad times. The best teams, they just learn from their experiences, whether it's good wins, good performances, or the opposite, which was Saturday. You know, you take the learnings and. Yeah, we've plenty of learnings there, and I'm sure you'll see a better Ireland team on Saturday.
You've seen the pain, you've felt the pain over the years as a player. So as a coach, is it any different or is it any worse or how is it?
It's very similar. It's different in some ways. You know, at the end of the game, you're not physically bashed and knackered, but mentally you're tired. You almost play the game with the lads, and you're as invested as the lads. So when you're in the coach's box, yeah, you're not getting the physical torture, but you're getting the mental torture. And Saturday was certainly the case. And look, there was good parts of Saturday as well, like how we managed the 20-minute red card, the maturity we showed in some of our game management. And it was just some inaccuracies that cost us in the end. And yeah, we'll try and improve on that going into Saturday.
You're talking about turning the page, and I mean, that's what you've got to do, because it's Japan. They can be tricky, as we've seen in the past, from an Ireland point of view, from a South Africa point of view, and from an Eddie Jones point of view also.
Yeah, he'll have some tricks up his sleeve. He's a you know, a coach with huge experience. He's had, you know, many teams over the years, and you can always see his style on the team that he coaches. You know, a lot of admiration for him in terms of what he's achieved in his coaching career. Despite having a few digs at me over the years, but he's a good rugby man from what I hear, and I'm sure he'll have some challenges for us on Saturday.
And just before we finish up, I mean, how have you found the transition from playing to almost kicking in frustration, imaginary balls around you and passing?
Look, it's different. I knew it was going to be different. You know, when you retire as a player and you do it for as long as I did, I was very blessed. You know, but it can also make it a bit tougher, because it's you do it for so long. So it was a tough 2 years in terms of that, and trying to find your way. I don't know if I even found it yet, but I'm back somewhere where I want to be and where I belong in many ways, and just want to make sure that I add value to the lads and give back to them, because I've had some great coaches over the years that have influenced me massively, and I want to pass it on now to them.
This is 2FM's Game On.
Well, one would imagine Johnny Sexton has a lot of value to add, but Neil Tracy joins us on the line. Neil, after the weekend, obviously Tadhg Byrne's appeal is to be heard very shortly. In your own unbiased opinion, was it a 20-minute red card?
I don't think it was, Ruby. At the time, I did think it probably was a yellow. Just on the fact that he had the kind of arm tucked, he didn't go in with the shoulder. But from my own understanding of it, when they were going upstairs, I would have thought that when you look at the challenge, and not even just in real time, even if you look at it in slow motion, it isn't a massive impact. It was a very, very low danger collision. So from my point of view, that's probably what would have taken it down from what would have kept it a yellow card. And I would be surprised if he picked up a ban at that hearing. We should find out something either, I'd say, late tonight or maybe tomorrow morning. It's probably good for him that it sounds like he has Beauden Barrett going in to bat for him as well. He came out after the match and said that he'd support him. He didn't think it was a red card. I would say testimony from that from a fellow player probably goes a long way in it as well. And so I would be confident that, look, even if he does pick up a ban, it's going to be a very, very small one.
Hugh, you're biting your tongue. Go on.
These Terenure boys are gone soft, Ruby. I tell you that. I don't even think it was a yellow card. I think it was the most innocuous contact in a contact sport. I think Bruce A will not referee again for another 45 years. He got so many things wrong, including this yellow card that wasn't a yellow card and upgraded to a red. I think it'll be rescinded. I think he'll be free to play. And I can't understand it. And yeah, and I mean, Neil, I don't know. I think people are saying it did ruin the game and New Zealand probably would have won it anyway. I don't know. I don't think you can quantify the impact of someone like Ty Byrne if you take him off, and given what he's done consistently for Ireland over the years, the amount of man of the match, his performances for the Lions, his performances when he came back from Munster in the win against Leinster, I think they got it wrong, badly wrong.
I don't know, I'm his biggest fan, but yeah, I don't know.
But we're waiting to see.
He turns his shoulder in, lads.
Yeah, and we'll wait and see. I'm generally wrong with these things.
We can all agree it probably wasn't a red card at the very least.
Okay, we'll all agree on that. So, come here, what do you think they'll do this weekend, Neil? Do you think they'll make wholesale changes? Do you think they'll just bring in maybe one or two to try and supplement the team? How do you think Andy Farrell will approach Japan?
Yeah, I get the sense it's going to be some changes rather than wholesale changes. It was something I asked Johnny Sexton this afternoon, and he basically suggested that some lads will be given an opportunity to impress, but I think there probably is an element now that, unfortunately, with games against Australia and South Africa to come, and quite a few of those Lions contingents still struggling to get back up to full speed, and they've been fairly lightly raced over the last month or so, that... Unfortunately, you're in a situation now where there are some of them that have to be played back into form. So I do think we're going to see players get opportunities this weekend. You look at maybe someone like Craig Casey coming in for a start. You look in the front row. I'd say Ronan Keller could come in. I'd say just mix and match, maybe a handful of changes. And also things depend as well on if Ty Byrne is available, for example. I think if Ty Byrne is available, you probably put him back in for the starts, just because he didn't get an opportunity to really play at the weekend. And then Stuart McCluskey as well. He's still limited in training with that groin injury he picked up at the weekend. Personally, while I would love to see him get another opportunity to impress, I don't want to see him play this weekend, because I think he did enough on Saturday to just be guaranteed his start against Australia and give him this weekend off to get his groin injury right and back him next week against the Wallabies.
Is Henshaw fit, Neil, do you know, or what's the story there, Robbie Henshaw?
It certainly looks like he is. The talk last week was that McCluskey was in there on merit.
Yeah.
Bundiaki and Robbie Henshaw, we were told, had trained fully all week. There was no suggestion that Henshaw didn't train at all this afternoon. So it does certainly look like it was a form call.
And, interesting. Yeah.
You wouldn't disagree with it.
And the poor Japanese, and not to belittle them, but like obviously they've had some incredible World Cup results over the last a couple of tournaments, and they have a good man in charge in Eddie there. But like if you look at the result against South Africa and even the previous match as well, they're going to be up against it this weekend, you'd imagine, Neil.
Yeah, 61-7. They're obviously a very different team to the one that beat Ireland in the World Cup in 2019, and it was funny, the game in 2021 in particular was actually referenced today by a couple of different people, how that game 4 years ago at the Aviva was kind of the day that everything started to click for Andy Farrell under this Irish team, when they ran up a massive score on Japan. It was Johnny Sexton's 100th cap. He got presented with that big gigantic sword as well, which he's told us he does still have pride of place in his back at home. So look, I think it's an ideal game for opportunity for Ireland to try get back on the horse this weekend with two very, very tough games to come. And who knows, maybe in a couple of years' time we could be talking about this as the day things started to click again.
And Kamir, before I let you go, put me in my box there and tell me how good Terenure are playing this season in Division 1A.
Oh, well, look, it was. I think everyone got a bit concerned after that heavy defeat down to Cork Conna in round two.
It turned out it was, look, nothing to see here. It was just a little slip in the matrix and that was it.
Yeah, but Neil, I saw them a couple of weeks ago against against Nina, where they pulled off a really, really good second half into a strong wind. Didn't get to see any of their massive win up in Ballinahinch at the weekend, but I think everyone down there is looking forward to the big Dublin 6 West derby against St Mary's in a couple of weeks' time.
That will be some game. But on a more serious note, if we learned anything at the last World Cup, is that we need 40 players going to a World Cup.
Yeah.
Surely against Japan, Andy Farrell has the blood more than just a few.
Yeah, but I one thing that would worry me a little bit is that we talk a lot about blooding players, but I think the frustrating thing sometimes with Andy Farrell's Ireland is that players do get opportunities in games like against Japan or maybe the odd Six Nations game against Italy, or like we saw a tour in Portugal and Georgia last week or last summer. But there does still seem to be a little bit of reluctance to give these players an opportunity against bigger teams like an All Blacks, like South Africa. Like, it was worth noting Stuart McCluskey as a prime example, 33 years old, and everyone was talking last weekend about how big an opportunity that was for him, his first time playing the All Blacks. He's been very, very lightly run against the bigger teams in the world. So many of his caps have come against the smaller nations. So it's all well and good blooding players in a game against Japan, but I think every now and again you do need to just break up that first 15 and try people in some of the bigger games as well.
Okay, on that note, we will leave it. You can hear Neil every week on the RTÉ Rugby podcast. So tune in for that. Neil, thanks a million.
This is 2FM's Game On.
Okay, you're very welcome back. Not too long to go in the show. We're going to talk Champions League and get the team news in Liverpool in a few minutes' time. But before that, we're talking to golf, and I'm delighted to say we have Raimi Burns on the line. Raimi, how are you?
I'm very well. You yourself?
I'm very good. Listen, great few days for Tom McKibben, and what a performance out in Hong Kong. I think in his own words, Raimi, it was the best golf he has ever played in his life. And boy, did he take advantage of that. Fantastic.
Yeah, certainly phenomenal golf. To start with a 60 and then finish, obviously, 63 the last round, 27 under par to win by, I think, 7 shots. Bogey the last hole, 3 bogeys all week. Phenomenal. He's a phenomenal golfer. We just don't really know how good he is yet because he's still so young. I think he's only 23 in a few months' time. But to get the invitation into the Open, there's a couple of open spots on the Masters as well, was phenomenal. So he's done it a weird way. You know, 18 years old, turning pro, going to South Africa, traveling around the world, playing European Tour, got this card for the PGA Tour, on LIV Golf now. So he's a phenomenal talent. We all know how good he is, but there's so many good golfers, but to do it under pressure in such an amazing field was a phenomenal, phenomenal achievement.
How long is Tom McKibben going to stay with Liv? Was that a 1 year or 2 year deal?
I think it was a $4 or $5 million deal for 2 years. So this will be his second year, and to play with players like Rahm and Tyrrell Hatton, etc., is that's a life learning experience in itself. So hopefully he'll win another more than $10.5 million next year.
Look, it obviously hasn't done him any harm. I mean, judging by Hong Kong last weekend, Raimi, you know, he played some fantastic stuff, and I was watching him at the Irish Open here as well. He was in contention for a lot of the tournament and didn't finish too badly in the end. I don't know. I mean, I guess maybe the eyebrows were raised in terms of the lack of crowds, the fact that he's not going to be in the spotlight really for most of the year unless he does turn up at these majors, which he's got into now, which is great for him. But overall, I guess we won't really be able to judge whether or not it was the right decision to join Liv until after he has finished.
It's hard to know. I don't really know. It's the Liv thing's like a washing machine in my head. I don't know. You know, I love watching golf. I like watching top class golf. Like some of my favorite golfers, Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka, they're all in Liv. I watch Liv. I watch it as much as I can. But from a history perspective, it doesn't have the same feel as a PGA Tour or European Tour. You know. But saying that, hopefully the golfing community and the golfing world will come together over the next few years and sort it out and distract people like us away from having to watch two different tours, you know.
And the thing about Ruby as well for me is like Phil Mickelson, they put all their irons in this, you know, basket, and they made a gamble that the golf was big enough of a sport and there was enough of draw in what they were trying to do that they would be able to have the two professional competitions in two leagues, if you like, side by side, the PGA Tour and LIV Tour. It hasn't worked out like that.
It doesn't look that way to me anyway. I don't know what you think, Raimi, but I was kind of looking at it. I could see exactly why Tom McKibben took the money at 23 and went to Liv. But is he getting out early enough to play himself onto a Ryder Cup team for a dare?
Well, I think the rules of the DP World Tour, etc., probably have to change. I think it's 4 tournaments they have to play. But, I mean, Tyrrell Hatton made it this year, or this Ryder Cup, with enough points. But there's a lot of, you have to play in all the majors. Your world ranking has to be really low to play in all these big events. So it'll be a difficult task, but I do think the European Tour will open up to, if there's such players like Tom McKibben, etc., that are on live, to represent Europe going forward. I hope that happens.
The season-ending finale this weekend kicks off. Rory McIlroy, obviously hot favourite to make a title, European Tour title number 7. Well, DP World Tour, if I'm using the correct title, though, Raimi. And like, what's your sense of McIlroy and Lowry this weekend? We know McIlroy loves these two tournaments in particular. Shane Lowry has a pretty good record out in the Middle East as well.
Yeah, well, I don't think Rory could use his driver in India, so hopefully he'll use his number one club this week, because that's a long
golf course.
He couldn't hit it at all. I don't even think he had it in the bag, so at least he'll have his warrior with him this week, and he'll be able to warm the driver up. So it's going to be a big event. I love watching it. It's the first of the sort of that Dubai swing, the last few tournaments of the European or the DP World Tour Series. So hopefully we'll have something to watch on Sunday afternoon. But the way Tom McKibben's playing golf and the way Shane played in India as well, hopefully we'll have three Irishmen up there looking at winning that title come Sunday morning our time anyway, you know.
We most certainly will, with a bit of luck. Remy, what about, that is the end of the golfing year. If you were to pick a highlight outside of the Ryder Cup for yourself, what would you go?
I think for me...
Rory, has to be Rory. Come on.
I don't know, man. Rory was good, but I think from a team perspective and bringing all the community, the people maybe that don't watch a lot of golf in, was... I think Shane's putt in Bethpage was phenomenal. Obviously Rory McIlroy as well, but and find it very difficult to choose between the two.
And can we just quickly, if I had to push you, do you think Seamus Power will keep his card? He's got three tournaments left now. I think he's still outside the top 100, and even the 125, which would give him certain playing exemption rights for next season. Do you think he will do it? He's running out of time.
It's even money. He's run out of time. I think that injury's still niggling him. But hopefully he'll do it. But it'll be a tough task.
Raimi,
but he's well able.
Yeah, pleasure as always. Thanks so much. Enjoy the golf this weekend. Thanks a million.
Thank you.
Raimi Burns there. Good stuff. Right, we have team news. Fergal Brennan is at Anfield ahead of Atletico, or I should say Real Madrid tonight. And Fergal, give us the big answer. Does Trent Alexander-Arnold start or not start?
No, he doesn't. He's on the bench, as expected. Xabi Alonso, very cagey in his press conference over whether or not he would be involved back at Anfield tonight. Obviously, Alonso making his return to Merseyside as well. So, Trent Alexander on the bench for Real Madrid. There'll be plenty of noise if he does make his way off it at some point this evening. Mixed reaction from the fans overall, really, about their returning former number 66. He's been out for 2 months injured, and he stayed on the bench for Real Madrid the last two games. So, how much action he'll actually see tonight remains to be seen, but this is all set for a really, really big night.
Well, I guess we're going to find out what the fans think of him, Paul, because he's going to have the red carpet all to himself if he comes on as a substitute. So we'd be left in no doubt about whether they're giving him the applause for a time well spent, or now you destroyed us and you're a traitor.
Yeah, you'll certainly hear it when he goes out to warm up anyway.
Yeah, exactly. What's your sense of tonight then? After Aston Villa at the weekend, 2-0 win, obviously, Fergal, and it looked like at least that they've stopped the rot for the time being. And the starting 11 tonight, maybe we're hearing from that Virts is going to play a big role tonight because he sees him more maybe as a European player. But your own sense of tonight and how Liverpool are going to do?
Massive, because I would agree with that, stopping the rot temporarily. We don't really know what exactly to make of Liverpool. They've been on that horrendous run of domestic form, and the Champions League's actually kind of provided them with a bit of shelter. The Eintracht Frankfurt win took a bit of the heat off Slot and some of his players prior to the Villa win over the weekend. As for Florian Wirtz, I think it could be a very important night for him. There's been so much attention on the new signings and the lack of performances, particularly in big games, Ekotike being the exception to that. Florian Wirtz is a £100 million man. I know obviously Isak is more, but he's not involved due to that injury. He needs a big performance because these are the types of games that Liverpool brought him in for. They know they're going to dominate the huge amount of matches that they play. He was supposed to give them that extra gear, particularly in central areas. It was a midfield that was criticised for being quite workmanlike and not really having goals and sparkle. That's what Wirtz was brought in to do. He hasn't done it yet, but this is a really, really big stage. And there's a real rivalry between the teams as well. Seven meetings since 2018. Obviously, Real Madrid won the two big ones, the finals in 18 and 22. So there's a lot on the table tonight, particularly for Liverpool.
How much time will Wirtz get, do you think, Paul? Because like we know he's been pushed off the ball quite a lot in the Premier League. And Slot has been a pains to say, look, he does need time. It's a more physical league. He needs to adjust. And he'll get it, obviously. But I mean, when does that time start to run out?
Yeah, it's hard to know. And ultimately, it's games like this where he needs to probably impose himself. You know, you're leaving somebody who's banging form and Cody Gakpo on the bench. And just looking at the Liverpool starting 11, I would just be a little bit concerned for that left-hand side. Like, Wirtz is probably going to have to drift into those areas just out of possession. Andy Robertson starts at left-back. His legs have really gone in the last 12 months. If I was Kylian Mbappe and Vinicius Jr., that's the side that I'd be playing, because he's not going to get a huge amount of protection from Wirtz. That's not his game tracking back.
Bomb it down the wing. Fergal, enjoy the match. Thanks so much.
No problem at all. Thanks, guys.
Super. Thanks a million. Fergal, Brennan there at Anfield. Last word to you, Ruby, as always.
Arsenal are two up, Hugh.
Two up, yes. And they've got Jan Koller, the old Slavia Prags. Do you remember Jan Koller, the big 6'5" Czech Republic international? They have a player who's the spit of him, number 25, who's causing a bit of problems. Thomas Chorzy is his name.
He just got whipped off.
Just got whipped off. Well, there you go. No more
it's
problems.
It's 2-0 though, right?
He limped off.
He certainly did. Moreno, very well worked all down the left-hand side. He is a very good substitute for Jokeres when he's not available. Scored a lot of goals for Spain and Arsenal already this season.
Yeah, and he took it very coolly as well. My thanks to Ruby. Good stuff, Ruby. Talk to you soon.
Cheers, Hugh.
Cheers, man. Thanks, Paul, as well. And my thanks to Ronan Lawler, who produced tonight. Stay tuned. Plenty more on the way to Shane Dawson. We'll be back tomorrow night from 6 o'clock. And the new music show is left. Before we leave it, our competition winner, €400, courtesy of PwC GA All-Stars, is Kieran Byrne, who correctly identified the winner as, do we know, Shane O'Donnell. Shane O'Donnell. Shane O'Donnell is the right answer. Right, thanks, guys. Ad break and the news after these. This is 2FM.